You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour, Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, or AFTA. That's AFTAH.org. We are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the powerful homosexual activist lobby. And we live in a time in which homosexuality is being celebrated like never before in the popular culture, in academia, in the political world, especially the Democratic Party, but now even more it's growing in the Republican Party. And I'm happy to be interviewing part two of our interview with Matt Barber, my good friend and board chairman of AFTA, and also Pastor Paul Blair from Fairview Baptist Church in Oklahoma City. These are two of my favorite guys. Now, homosexual activists, before you jump on that statement, we're all married, happily married guys here. This is the platonic. This is brotherly love, right, guys? You know, just because you say you like some guy doesn't mean it's sexual. That's the whole problem with the homosexual movement. They don't understand brotherly love, which is why they fall into error with their scripture, and they start saying, well, just about every same-sex relationship in the Bible, Paul, is homosexual, right? Jesus and John, David and Jonathan, Ruth and Naomi, everything where there's a love, a godly love between two people of the same gender, the homosexual revisionist theologians are saying, well, that was a sexual relationship.
Well, obviously, it must be a situation where your mind is affected by your particular worldview, and if you're a thief, you basically consider that everybody must be a thief, and if you're a pervert, you must consider that everybody must also be perverted. So that's the only explanation I can come up with for
well,
that.
Well, I'll give them that everybody has perversion potential, you know, because we're all sinners. But I mean, yeah, this idea that everybody is homosexual
okay,
is just
how about gross perversion?
Yeah.
Well, Pete, though, it actually there is a more serious point here. It does reflect the fact that at the core of what homosexuality is, what it's all about, it is about sex. It's about an aberration in sexual behavior and a perversion of sex. So if that is central to your identity, if the central aspect of your identity is that you self-identify as a person who is attracted to other people sexually of the same sex, then you, as Paul mentioned, your whole worldview revolves around that. So anytime there are two men or two women and they have a close relationship in Scripture or anywhere where else, why they must be homosexual, because you identify yourself based upon your own sexual proclivities.
And there's this pathological need and drive to rationalize the sexual misbehavior that you've embraced in your own life. That's what's so creepy about the movement. There's always this need. Everything revolves around rationalizing the choices. And yes, it is a choice to embrace whatever temptations you have in life. The adulterer makes the choice to embrace that sexual sin. He messes around on his wife. He makes that choice. Now, he may have had the temptation. I mean, you know, a lot of the debate, Matt, I'm sure you would agree, is caught up in this in the terminology and the playing field that the gay activists would like. Even that use of that word gay right there. I mean, it's, you know, the presumption that people are naturally have this identity that's oriented towards what we call perversion.
Well, proponents of God's objective truth relative to sexual morality and sexual sin, we're not as crafty as the enemy, and the enemy being Satan. This is what we're talking about here is satanic. This is sin. And those who are defenders of sin and who embrace and identify based upon giving in to such sinful temptations, they're very good at crafting the language and arguing, semantics. semantics. And if we play by their rules and let them define the terms, then we're off to a marked disadvantage. Unfortunately, too many people in churches and in para-church organizations and pro-family organizations across the country have adopted the euphemistic language of homosexual activists, and it puts us at a distinct disadvantage.
Well, one of those, Paul, is, and I want to get into a better introduction to you guys, but this brings me to you, Paul, sexual orientation, that concept which suggests that people are inherently, this is just, they have no choice, it's just how they're oriented. And it's, of course, crafted to take responsibility away from the person. And you recently, you and your church, Fairview Baptist Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, right outside Oklahoma City, were just victimized by these awful hate calls, and we're going to play them here. This is after Paul Blair, Pastor Paul Blair, testified against a sexual orientation ordinance in Oklahoma City. Here's the a sampling. This is just some, the cleaner ones. No vulgarity. There was some awful vulgarity and graphic language. This is a couple of the awful hate calls that you received, Paul, at your church phone, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, let's play it.
I have committed homicide more than one time and in more than one state, and yet have not been caught nor charged. Think about that.
Okay.
I will be coming to visit you at 1230 North Sooner Road. I will be seeing you, bringing you something. The Baptist religion is not recognized by Christ. It is an American religion that was formed years after Christ acknowledged the Catholic Church as its religion. The Baptist Church is not acknowledged by Christ. I will be coming to see you at 1230 North Sooner Road. Thank you. Once you receive this message, you will already be seen going into the building at 1230 North Sooner Road. I'll see you soon.
Okay, Paul. That guy's got the creepiest voice I think I've ever heard.
Hold on a second. I'm hiding under my desk.
Yeah, and I'm going to come visit you next month, Paul, at 1230 North Sooner Road.
You know, hey, Pete, real quickly, when Paul contacted me about this, Pete, I said, you know, what is this guy thinking? Paul was a played football for the Chicago Bears. He used to rip the arms off of running backs for fun.
Well, I think he's. I think they're thinking along the same lines as the guy who called you a homosexual, Matt, by manipulating the photo that we were. Matt and I were at a rally in Chicago, and Matt was his usual wild self, and his arms were moving. Well, a lesbian photographer came up and started snapping pictures, and they actually did this. You couldn't make this stuff up, folks. They caught Matt's hand when picture your wrist going down, and they stopped the picture with his hands going down. And they tried to make Matt Barber, a former professional boxer, out to be a limp-wristed homosexual. So my thinking, if Matt Barber and Paul Blair are gay, well, then just about everybody's gay, right? I mean, anyways, Paul, we'd laugh, but I mean, that was spooky, and it was far worse in the threats. I mean, he had made charges about raping your wife.
He became more emboldened over the course of the day. Those four calls that you just heard right there came in within about a 15-minute period between 4 and 4:15 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, the day after this Oklahoma City Council hearing. And when we heard those, my secretary, of course, she gets in early, and she called me immediately, and I got up there to listen to those, and we certainly wanted to report those to the police. But at that point in time, you know, we figured, you know, this guy claims to be a homicidal maniac, and, you know, maybe he is, but we just reported to the police. We wanted to make sure that they had it on record, and we were going to leave it at that. But then while we were going during the lunch hour, he calls back with further threats, this time including sexual assault against my wife. And then after that, he called back and insinuated that he had planted a bomb at the church property, and saying the words detonate it as he was hanging up the phone.
Wow.
And at that point, it went over the line. And again, these calls took place over the course of about 8 hours, from 4 o'clock until noon, and then they continued even in the afternoon. So it wasn't a situation where a guy just lost his temper and reacted. This was carried out over the course in total of about 12 to 14 hours. And you know, by definition, domestic terrorism is exactly what this gentleman did. And I use the term gentleman loosely, but making bomb threats in a, against a church, a house of worship. And, of course, we also have a private Christian school there. So we've got students from kindergarten through fifth grade that are there throughout the course of the day. At that point, we took it very seriously, and we got the police back out there. And, of course, they turned it over to the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and they have proceeded to it.
And where do they stand, Paul? We're pre-recording on December 14th. This airs on December 17th. Where does the case stand now?
This gentleman is now known publicly. His picture is out there. A guy named David Moxley, a single 43-year-old gentleman in Oklahoma City. Again, I use the term gentleman. I probably shouldn't use that. He certainly has proven to be no gentleman. But going to school, unemployed, obviously angry about the events that were taking place. He has been arrested, and he is bonded out now on $25,000 bail. But he's charged with one felony, of course, that being the bomb threat, and then a misdemeanor with being threatening and profane phone calls. So the district attorney for Oklahoma County is taking this very seriously. I was pleased to have received a phone call from him a week ago stating that he was concerned that this gentleman, again, I'm going to quit using the word, that this less than gentleman may be psychotic because of the nature of the phone calls and the use of different voices and this and that nature. So they're apparently taking it very seriously, and I'm glad that they are.
Well, he sure is a theologically precise psychotic. I'll tell you that. That's kind of strange. You don't get too many psychotics going off into theology there. But we're talking to Pastor Paul Blair, former lineman for the Chicago Bears. He's now a pastor at Fairview Baptist Church. And we're talking to my good friend Matt Barber, who is has many titles, but he is the Director of Culture Affairs at Liberty Council, a Christian rights organization in Lynchburg, Virginia. We'll be right back after the break. Everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarber, president of Americans for Truth. Our website is americansfortruth.org. Help us. We need financial help. We are struggling against the one of the most powerful, and it's an amazing movement in terms of what has transpired over the last several decades. The growth of homosexuality from a taboo behavior that was not even spoken of to now a driving force in American politics and culture. And it's just extraordinary. And you guys, I have lots of things I want you to react to. But before we get off the topic, I want to talk about the, you know, jokes aside, the role of aggressive direct action tactics and very mean, sometimes nasty tactics as a means of growing gay power. It started with Anita Bryant. If you haven't seen it, go to YouTube and plug in Anita Bryant pie in the face. You know, she was at a press conference. Some guy walked up. You talk about demonic. You should see the look on this guy's face, guys. You know, comes up and throws a pie in the face of Anita Bryant right in the middle of a press conference. Imagine if a conservative did that to a homosexual activist at a press conference. I mean, and the Dr. Laura Schlesinger, anybody, any major VIP celebrity who takes a stand on homosexuality becomes the target of this activist lobby. And Matt, you know, it's been effective because they've taken down almost every single person they've gone after.
Well, and we wonder why people who contribute, who sign petitions for marriage amendments and are concerned about having their names publicized, because we saw in California after Prop 8 droves of homosexual protesters, you know, threats of burning down churches, vandalism. We saw an elderly woman knocked around and a styrofoam cross that she had trampled upon and crushed into tiny bits, which, as I've mentioned before, I think was a metaphor for this whole battle here. This is about hatred of God, hatred of God's design for human sexuality.
Let me stop you there, Matt.
Yeah.
I mean, that is an important point. You know, they accuse us of hate, but underlying so much of the activism, Paul, and you're a preacher, is if you hate God's morality, if you hate God's natural order that God created, then you do hate God, at least at some level, right?
Absolutely. Everything about Satan and his works is pure rebellion against God's perfection, God's holiness, and God's design. You know, in Genesis, we see creation, and, you know, it's very detailed as far as how God created all that there is. But I think it's interesting that in day six, when God came to creating man, he was created different than everything else. You know, with all animal life, God simply spoke and it was. But it says, and in fact, both male and female, it was created. But it says that God created man of the dust of the earth, blew into his nostrils the breath of life, and he became a living soul, of course, created in the image and likeness of God. And then God paused after only creating man and said, made this observation and recorded it so we'd all know. He said, "It's not good for a man to be alone. I will make a help meet for him. I'll make the perfect complement." Well, God at that point in time could have given us anything. What was God's will? You know, God could have given Adam a set of golf clubs and said, "Knock yourself out," or given him a dog and said, "Hey, man's best friend, that's all you need." But he said, "It's not good that you be alone. Here's what you need." And then God took from him, from his side, a rib. Of course, it's a perfect reflection of Christ and his bride, as we are both body and bride of Christ. And created for man the woman, the completer, the perfect complement. That's what God's will is. And said, "For this cause have I created them. Let not man put asunder what I have joined together." So that's what God's will is. Now, rebellion is taking what God's perfect plan is, one man, one woman for life, everything that we need to be complete and experience joy in our life, perfect contentment, fulfillment, everything we need under God's will is that. Satan has tried to pervert it, saying, "Oh, you don't need marriage, and oh, you can't be satisfied with one woman." And of course, there's no contentment in sin, so you keep pushing it farther and farther and farther because there's no satisfaction there. And then you lose the use of the woman, and man turns to man, which God defines in Romans chapter 1, results in a reprobate mind, or a cast-off, a castaway, a worthless mind, a mind truly that is void of any knowledge of God or any desire to yield to God's will.
Wow, and often the debate does not really revolve around that, Paul, and I really do think that Christian morality and a Christian defense needs to come back into the issue. Matt, I think you agree. You know, the idea that we can win this solely on practical arguments alone, I think we're at the point now where, you know, hey, if there's two lesbians and they've been together faithful to each other for 50 years, Matt, that's still wrong before God.
Yeah, well, sin is always wrong.
Right.
It's sin, and Christ has clearly defined the very narrow parameters for human sexuality and sexual behavior that fall within his definition of what is good, and anything outside of those parameters is sin. Sexual behavior between a man and woman within the bonds of marriage is it. Everything else is sin.
And that includes a lot of heterosexual sin, right?
Absolutely.
There's heterosexual. Of course there is. Fornication, adultery, there's incest, there's bestiality, but all of that, you know, I ask people sometimes, I say, what's the difference or the opposite of heterosexuality? And people automatically say homosexuality. I say, no. The opposite of heterosexuality is all of the sexual deviant behavior. So that anything that is not sex between a man and a woman within the bonds of marriage, the opposite of that is sexual deviance. And it doesn't matter whether it's homosexuality or adultery or fornication or incest or bestiality. Those are all sin. And if one of them is not sin, then none of them are sin. And Scripture is very clear that, in fact, they all are sin.
Right. And, you know, here's a little thought, maybe not in Oklahoma, Paul, but in many parts of the country, it's as politically incorrect to be against an engaged couple or a boyfriend and a girlfriend having sex outside of marriage. It's almost as politically incorrect as it is to be against the homosexual lobby. So there are other sexual sins that are
absolutely.
Also, you know, and so, you know, I like to do the sexual sin substitution test. Whenever you hear that you have a question about the gay issue, the homosexual issue, of course, that word gay is an artifice in itself. But whenever you have a question, just substitute another sexual sin and see if it makes sense. We don't have Porno Pride Month. You know, we don't celebrate incest incest pride day and have parades.
Or strive toward incest rights.
Right.
Go ahead, B.
No, you go, Paul.
Well, see, that's one of the areas that we've been deceived. Of course, one of the names for Satan is deceiver, and he has deceived mankind. Our founding fathers understood. In fact, that's what Blackstone defined the pursuit of happiness.
Tell us who Blackstone was again.
Sir William Blackstone was an 18th century jurist. He was the authority of English law during the time of our founders. If you studied politics or you studied law, then you would be well versed on Blackstone's 4-volume commentaries on law. And much of the terms that we read in the Declaration of Independence, for example, when it says the laws of nature and nature's God, is defined in Blackstone's commentaries on law. And that's natural law, God's law, and it's codified in the Holy Scriptures, according to Blackstone. Well, Blackstone said that the pursuit of happiness was this, that man, as a created being, cannot be happy unless he is walking in the will of his Creator. And that is true. I mean, men, we can all testify to this. Of course, I was a lost man as a football player. I got saved when I was 26, so I've walked on the other side of the tracks. But I have been married to my wife for almost 23 years, completely faithful and monogamous relationship with my wonderful wife. And gentlemen, I am as completely content as I could possibly ever be. She is everything that I want in life, both sexually, emotionally, psychologically. We truly complete each other. But you look back in the book of Ecclesiastes as a perfect illustration as how Satan's deception works. Solomon, who was David's son and had been a good king initially, wound up in all of his prosperity taking his eyes off of God and lost his joy and set about very systematically trying to find that happiness. And one of the places that he looked was sexuality. And the scripture tells us that Solomon had 1,000 women in his harem, had 700 wives, 300 concubines. And in chapter 2 of the book of Ecclesiastes, amongst everything else that he had experimented with, Solomon says that he hated his life. And here was a man that was the most famous, the most powerful, the wealthiest man in the world, had 1,000, and you know they were beautiful women, but he was miserable. We cannot find contentment in sin. Sin always takes us farther than we ever intend to go, and we always pay far more than we ever intend to pay. And the reality is, God is very narrow. God's will is established in Scripture, and when we are walking in God's will, that is when we truly are content and we truly experience joy in our lives.
Yes, and guys, we only have a short time, and so I want to, you talked about, Paul, you talked about natural moral law. Matt, address for me, we are in a very dangerous place now with Hillary Clinton's speech to the world promoting homosexual so-called gay rights. We are now, as a country, rather than championing righteousness, we are effectively championing sin abroad, and we are using our superpower status now to promote homosexuality and gender confusion to the third world. Explain the importance of this.
Well, yeah, and how dare this president and Hillary Clinton and this administration export our moral decline here in the United States and our turning our face from God and from morality in the name of human rights, which turns logic and reason on its head. Here we're exporting sin, we're exporting immoral behavior, and using extortion, the purse strings of the United States and foreign aid and the threat of removal of foreign aid in order to compel nations that around the world that may still recognize traditional values relative to human sexual behavior. We're saying either you adopt our postmodern moral relativist view of sexual behavior, or we are going to withhold from you any foreign aid. We are going to extort.
Stop it right there, Matt. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, folks, to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're talking to Paul Blair and Matt Barber, and I have to explain that Matt cannot hear the music coming in, so he didn't know that when it's going to end for the break. But Matt, you were talking about this new policy where President Obama is going to use U.S. foreign aid to promote homosexuality, and Hillary talked about how sexual orientation, using the gay semantics, the homosexualist semantics, she acted as if that's a fundamental human right across the world. Now, this is incredible because there are still countries. Well, of course, there's the Muslim countries, which are very outspoken opposed to homosexual behavior, and in some cases actually not just criminalize it, but actually have some severe penalties. And you have Christian countries like Uganda and countries where Christianity, I guess, is more accepted than it is here in the United States, Paul, where these countries are now basically going to have to decide, do I want the U.S. foreign aid or do I want to keep my morals?
Well, it's interesting, guys. One of the things that as we look at this and in a number of different ways, you know, we had talked before last week prior to the program, Peter. One of the platforms that communism had, that Marx and Engels and their students had developed for establishing a world government. And by the way, communism is a global government. There was never any intent for it just to be in one nation or another. It was ultimately, by their very design, they had to do away with the competition of capitalism and bring the world together into one communal utopia. But it was believed by Marx that the family was a tool of capitalism. And if they were able to destroy the family, then there would be no need of private property ownership rights. So one of the things that they have been working very diligently in doing is the destruction of the family. And we have seen that the homosexuality actually is listed in one of their 45 declared goals as trying to inculcate homosexual values or lack of values into the American culture. And we see those that are pushing towards a global utopia are actually working on trying to promote this worldwide. I don't think it's an accident. I think these two things are very connected.
Pete, can I jump in?
Sure.
On this? Paul, you're absolutely right. And the Judeo-Christian sexual ethic specifically is it was in the crosshairs of Karl Marx and of those trying to impose a globalist communist structure, if you will. And, you know, Marx said that religion was the opiate of the masses. And a part and parcel of communism is that it is a secularist and an anti-theist philosophy, political philosophy. And I've often said that the homosexual activist lobby and what I call the sexual anarchist lobby, the larger, you know, abortion industry and the comprehensive sex education industry, everybody pushing moral relativism in terms of sexual behavior, I've said, but particularly the homosexual activist, that is the polar ice cutter. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That's an iron-helmed boat that the Coast Guard uses to go through and break the ice so that the bigger ships can come in behind it. So homosexual activism, undermining the Judeo-Christian sexual ethic, doing away with it, that is the icebreaker that breaks the ice so that the bigger communist ships and the redistributionist ships and, you know, all of the other ships of...
Well, what about the ship of religious liberty? I mean, you know, if you listen, you read that speech, and I encourage all our listeners to watch the speech, just plug in Hillary. You can actually get it on the AFTA website. You can watch Hillary's speech to the UN. But Matt, when you start talking about this idea of sexual orientation, which is an activist semantical construct and start talking about it as a fundamental right, well, then you create the competition between that so-called fundamental right and our religious freedom. And you listen to the homosexual activists now, they're basically saying, Wayne Besson said it in an interview I was on with him on the Barry Lynn Show. He said, if you're in the stream of commerce, Matt and Paul, if you're a homosexual company, I mean, if you are a Christian company and you are in the stream of commerce, that means doing business with the society, then you cannot discriminate against people based on sexual orientation. So they're effectively overriding people's religious liberty.
Heifel-Bloom summed it up best. This is President Obama's recess appointment to the EEOC, a radical lesbian activist advocate for polyamory, open relationships and marriage between multiple people in a communal kind of setting. I mean, a radical sexual anarchist. She said it best. When it comes to newfangled gay rights versus religious liberty.
Now, she didn't say newfangled, right?
No, she didn't. But here is what she did say, quote, gays win, Christians lose. And that was the crux of what Hillary Clinton had to say. And how dare she, how offensive is it that she is disingenuously comparing newfangled gay rights built around sexual behaviors, aberrant sexual behaviors, and actual human rights and the very noble and genuine civil rights movement of the past. That is so offensive.
And Peter Sprigg called it cultural imperialism, Paul. We've now become a force for evil in the world rather than a force for good.
Well, Isaiah talks about in his day and age, and we're seeing it now, where right is turned into wrong and wrong is turned into right and bitter waters have become sweet. And truly, we've turned the world upside down. You know, you look at some of the things that we've got going on in America and you'd think we'd moved into the twilight zone. But ultimately, all of these forces, the force of communism, the force of the radical homosexual agenda, all of these, the secularist movements in America, you know, they all have the same source, the same ultimate conspirator, and that is Satan. And Satan is trying to take the purity and perfection of the Word of God and God's morality and God's law and flush it down the toilet to establish a humanist utopia, which, of course, we know how that's going to turn out. We've seen illustrations of that in years past in communist Russia, communist China, and Cuba. All it turns into is a totalitarian state where the proletariat doesn't have freedom. They are crushed under the iron hand of Big Brother. And that's ultimately what the Bible talks about is going to happen in the world after the rapture.
Well, we clearly need a revival in the United States if we're to turn things around. But, Matt, we did have a success recently here with the effort to strip the universal the military ethical code of the sodomy, the ban on sodomy, and of course also bestiality was stopped after an outcry. Explain what happened and explain the importance of keeping that sodomy ban in our military.
Yeah, can you believe we're even having this discussion?
No,
but for the very vocal opposition to this from people like Paul Blair, Peter LaBarbera, Americans for Truth, Liberty Council, our friends over at the Family Research Council, and others, this would have slipped right in, a repeal on sodomy, male-on-male sodomy, and on bestiality, of all things. And we found ourselves with strange bedfellows, so to speak. You know, even PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, came out in opposition to this repeal and chastised the president for, putting, I guess, animals in harm's way within the ranks of the armed services. I'm not sure exactly how the rationale worked. You know, I often say, you know, bestiality when nay means nay. But it's ridiculous.
Hey, can I interrupt you there, Matt?
Yeah.
Frank Kameny, the homosexual activist icon who recently died at a very old age, he wrote me in an email about bestiality. He said he thought it was okay as long as the animal doesn't mind. I don't know how you're going to get consent from an animal. I guess that you might need that yay or nay code language.
The long and short of it is that under the UCMJ.
And what is the UCMJ?
Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 125, Prohibition on Sodomy, that is retained, and the current prohibition against sodomy and bestiality are retained. They remain a violation of UCMJ Article 125. So they have not, at least at this point, removed the ban on sodomy.
But this was a sneaky thing, wasn't it, Matt? They were trying to, because I noticed that the SLDN, which is a Service Members Legal Defense Network, which is the leading homosexual activist group promoting homosexuality in the military, they did not make a big deal of this. I think they were trying to slip this through. The guys at CNS News, thank God they caught it. The importance of taking this down is the next goal for the homosexual activists in the military is to create equal housing, right? I mean, so you would have homosexual couples.
Their goals are manifold. That's one of them, to the imposition of counterfeit gay marriage in the ranks of the armed services, all the benefits and privileges, the married housing, so that, you know, the conservative Christian military family from Alabama is living next door to, Bill and Chad, you know, who identify as gay, and they're sharing the married housing. And also, another very real threat is here. It took literally days, if not hours, for the radical LGBT activists to come out and demand that cross-dressers be allowed to serve openly.
Yeah.
And so we're talking men, and, you know, sleeping alongside your daughters, your 18-year-old daughter in basic training in the ranks of the armed services, showering alongside fully biological men that just by the virtue of the fact that they say, I feel like a woman today, that they should be able to wear a dress, be in the ranks of the armed services, shower and sleep alongside your daughters. This is how radical this LGBT agenda is, and they have infected the United States military with this radical San Francisco-style social engineering.
But they have, when they got their big law passed, when they repealed so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there were some things that were not touched, and one of them was this housing issue and so-called a non-discrimination code explicitly, all sorts of other agenda items that they needed, and this was going to be one of them, but it was stopped, and we can thank God for that. And, of course, the bestiality thing got the most attention because, hey, you know, it's another sexual sin, folks, and there was a time, this may sound radical, but there was a time when homosexuality was almost as horrific as bestiality,
well,
right, Paul?
The prohibition against bestiality and sodomy are not juxtaposed without reason in the UCMJ Article 125. They're basically saying, hey, this really, really disordered
30 seconds, Matt.
Behavior it needs to be prohibited in the ranks of the armed services.
Yeah, and it's sexual perversion. It's all grouped together. Well, folks, we're talking to Pastor Paul Blair from Fairview Baptist Church, who recently received an awful death threat, him and his church, and we're talking to Matt Barber, who is an associate dean at the Liberty University School of Law. We'll be right back after the break. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org. Welcome back, folks. We're talking to Matt Barber and Paul Blair, who resides at 1230 North Sooner Road. Go back to the first part of the interview for the death threats by, I guess you would say, a homophobic Vincent Price. That was very bizarre. But, Matt, we have another serious development here. And let's face it, we are being bombarded by the homosexual activists. The Human Rights Campaign, which is the leading homosexual lobby group in the nation, has a very big scam going, quite a racket, called their workplace equality standards and their corporate equality standards. And they put out a PDF, a report every year, judging corporations by how pro-homosexual they are. And to get a homosexual 100% ranking, they have to do certain things. Well, HRC is very smart. What they did was, once they got a company to get the 100% ranking, the perfect ranking in pro-homosexual standards, they keep upping the ante to what it takes to get the 100%. And this year, in 2012, what it required to get 100% is for corporations to start funding those transsexual, they call them sex change operations, but they're these awful disfiguring operations for people who supposedly want to become the other sex. Now we see major corporations funding those awful, horrific operations to get the 100% ranking.
Yeah, it's reprehensible. I mean, and again, their corporate equality index, it basically says you either sign off on every one of our radical, extremist, sexual anarchist demands and fund this mutilation, cosmetic mutilation surgery. It's unconscionable. You either fund it, or we are going to call you intolerant, bigoted, transphobes, homophobes, and you're going to have a low score in our equality index. It's the HRC, the Radical Homosexual Activist Lobby, strong-arming major Fortune 100, 500 corporations into capitulating to their will, and because people are so frightened by this little paper tiger, this tiny minority, these major corporations are kowtowing and buying into their radical demands.
And Paul, because when they do that, when they grab on and they start start funding these so-called sex change operations, that means any consumer of that company, anybody using that product or that service, is subsidizing these awful operations.
Well, Christians and, quite frankly, just patriots in America are going to have to come out of the closet, if you don't mind me using that expression, and quit being politically correct. You know, we have allowed the other side to terrorize us through threats of being labeled homophobic or this or that, and we won't stand on truth. We won't stand on constitutional truth. We won't stand on economic truth. We won't stand on biblical truth. I was out at a store this last week on Saturday with my wife, and I had I'm as a large guy at 6'5", 300 pounds, and an ex-football player, and on TV quite a bit, I'm fairly recognizable. And a lady came up to me and she said, "Pastor Blair, I just wanted to thank you so much for the stance that you're taking. Boy, we are so much with you. We're praying for you. Thank you, thank you, thank you." And I said, well, I appreciate that, ma'am. She said, "My husband's the pastor of such and such a church over here in another community, and we're so glad that you're taking the stand so that we don't have to." And I thought, you know, that's not the point. The point is, yeah, we are taking a stand. You need to come stand with us. And that's what we need to do. Christians need to stand on biblical truth. It's never been popular. You know, all of these books that we treasure in Scripture, you know, when we read from the prophet Isaiah or from Jeremiah or Obadiah or any of these men, none of them were loved by those in their community. Nobody likes to be told about sin. But and the same thing is true today. We have to stand on biblical truth or we're going to lose it. And as we continue to stand, we've got to encourage others to come out and stand with us. And as you alluded to a moment ago, one great way that Christians can stand is to not support financially, you know, organizations like Home Depot that are avidly supportive of the homosexual agenda. You know, we are free people in a free society. We have the choice to choose to spend our money with companies that we wish to support.
And what happened with Macy's recently, Matt?
Yeah, well, Macy's, you know, we had a we have a client, Liberty Counsel does now, Natalie Johnson, who was fired for telling a man who was walking into the women's dressing rooms, he was wearing lipstick, and she said, "Excuse me, sir, you can't go in there, that's for women." Well, Macy's fired her. This has gone viral. The news on this has gone viral. There are people, you know, this puts women, Macy's open fitting rooms policy that allows any man to go in. We now have a second employee who has contacted us to say that she has had customers come to her several times worried about their daughters, in their changing and having men come in to change in the dressing rooms. Because remember, this is completely a subjective analysis. If you feel like a woman, why, you're a woman. That's the
you can have all the biological nature. Body parts of a man, and
of
you
course.
Can and you but you feel your gender identity, the PC phrase, I'm a woman.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Quickly, though, let me offer a little bit. You know, we're railing on. You hear a lot of negative stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we need to be positive here too, and remember that people say, "Man, how do you do all this?" And you see these political battles. Some you lose, some you win. How do you not get discouraged? And I say, well, you know, first of all, they're gonna hate us because they first hated Christ and they hate God's truth. And you know, Alfred Lord Tennyson, in charge of the Light Brigade, he once observed, "Ours is not to reason why. Ours is but to do and die." So we're just commanded to speak truth. We don't plant the seed. We don't have to worry about what happens from there on. God takes care of all that.
Mm-hmm. And we have to stick to the biblical truth, Paul. You know, I'm distressed at these emergent churches that are starting to want to make an accommodation on the homosexual issue because it's hard, because it does engender opposition from the popular culture and from powerful political and cultural forces. And so you see some Christians saying, I you know, they say they're being biblical, but they're really not, because they're starting to identify with things like sexual orientation, which has no, there is no biblical basis. Correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but there is no biblical basis for sexual orientation in the Bible.
You are absolutely correct. God created males, males, and females, females. And I think what we will see, Peter, because we're seeing it here, there is a hunger for Christians in America. We are reaching a point where we are so tired of sitting on the sidelines and not engaging the culture, and they are so tired of going to churches that won't speak biblical truth, that those churches and pastors which are standing up are seeing tremendous growth in their congregations. I know we have here our radio ministry from across the state of Oklahoma. We get cards and letters and calls on a daily basis from folks appreciating what we're doing. So if pastors would recognize that they are not called to be CEOs of little corporations trying to compete and grow their membership, but they are God-called men standing in the pulpits and standing in the communities proclaiming God's truth, and if they would get back to that, they'll be surprised at what kind of response they get from their congregations and from the community, and who knows if we can't see another great awakening sweep our land.
Wonderful, wonderful advice and good words, Paul. And Matt, 1 minute left. What about young people? Because if we can't, if the young people keep going down this path, we're doomed. So how are young people also they want that idealistic vision as well?
Well, and unfortunately, the millennial generation at this point has bought into a lot of the euphemistic language of the gay rights movement. Hey, we just have to keep speaking God's truth. Kids have come around, the millennials have come around on abortion homicide. Now they are vastly pro-life. 30 years ago, the converse was true. We can expect to see down the road, I think, people to come to the realization that the homosexual sin lobby is built on just that, on the lies of the enemy and sin.
Well, thanks to both you guys for being on, and keep up the fight. These are two wonderful warriors. Support Liberty Council. Support Paul. You've got Reclaiming America for Christ, correct?
That's correct.
And what's that website?
RA4C.org. That's RA4C.org.
And Matt, yours is LC.org. God bless both you guys, and may God bless you, give you many decades more of Christian work to go out there and make the left uncomfortable.
Thanks, Pete.
God bless. And you can reach Americans for Truth anytime through our website at americansfortruth.org.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.